This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn and Shaoning. We're running a poll this morning on the BFM Twitter account asking you, do you find it expensive to buy healthy, nutritious food? We've had about 40 votes so far. 80% of them have said, yes, it is expensive to buy healthy and nutritious food. Continue to let us know what you think, because we're taking a look at food security this morning, because the latest Edge Weekly has run a cover story on it. Now, the basic definition of food security, of course, is the availability of food and people's ability to access it. And according to the 2018 Global Food Security Index compiled by the Economist Intelligence Unit, or the EIU, we rank 40th out of 113 countries in terms of our food security. Now, that doesn't sound too bad, you know, 40 out of 113, until we actually see the country that tops the list as the most food secure in the world, which is Singapore.
Yeah, so how does this tiny, tiny, tiny island state with virtually no agriculture sector do this? I mean, they scored 85.9 compared to Malaysia's 68.1. And in contrast, agriculture contributes 80.2% to Malaysia's GDP based on 2017 figures. I just cannot figure this out. How does this survey work, and why do they have this level of food security in Singapore? Is it planning?
It's a planning. I think it's also diversifying their food sources, because Singapore is obviously, as you mentioned, not just a tiny island, not just a tiny, tiny island, but a tiny, tiny, tiny island. And they do face a lot of struggles when it comes to space for farming and space for natural resources. They don't have any.
They don't grow anything other than human beings.
And it's... Which are a natural resource in
itself,
right?
Yeah, and even then they're not doing such a good job. I mean, their fertility rate is quite low.
Yeah, replacement rates are like 1.7%, I think, something like that. But I guess in their case, it's like necessity is the mother of invention, right? They have to figure out this problem, and therefore they've dedicated much more time and attention to it than maybe we have. So the Edge interviewed Tun Daim Zainuddin, who's chairman of the Council of Eminent Persons, for his view on this. And he believes that Malaysia has been ignoring the agricultural sector for a long time, especially since the 80s, when the economy shifted towards manufacturing and assembly. So Tun Daim doesn't believe we are in a food security crisis, but he does say we need to act fast in order to prevent one. And one of the reasons that we aren't considered very food secure is because we import a lot of our food. Now, our food import bill grew from 10.5 billion ringgit in 1998 to 51 billion ringgit in 2017.
Meanwhile, Malaysia's food exports increased from 6 billion in 1998 to 32 billion in 2017. 2017 statistics show that Malaysia's imported more than it exported in almost every category of fruit and vegetables, and these include basic products that you think we would be self-sufficient on, things like onion, garlic, chili, and ginger. Very, very basic cooking products.
So one of the big mistakes when we talk about our food security is that we tend to conflate food security with rice sufficiency levels here in Malaysia. And that's not necessary. That's actually inaccurate, because yes, we have, I think, 70% self-sufficiency levels in rice, if I remember correctly, from a Kazanah research report not that long ago. But when you bring in elements like fruits and vegetables, our sustainability levels actually drop quite significantly, because there are two elements that go into food security. It's affordability and availability. And we import a lot of our fruits and vegetables. And I spoke to Professor Syed Azam Ali of Crops for the Future a little while ago on this subject. And Crops for the Future is basically a research organization looking at maximizing underutilized crops, because the world as a whole is over reliant on only a few crops. So maize, wheat, and rice are the biggest. I think they represent about 60-70% of the global diet. Mm-hmm. And that's only three crops. Can you imagine? We used to have humans used to cultivate something like 30,000 different species.
Imagine if there was pestilence or a certain kind of like nowadays you have like some sort of infection, mm-hmm, or some disease, and then you just can wipe out. Like at one time, you know, the world was facing a banana shortage. Don't
yes.
laugh.
No, right? It's true. The Cavendish banana.
Yeah, something was happening. They couldn't figure it out. And so that if once there's an over-reliance on any particular crop, then mm-hmm, you have these risk factors rearing their ugly head.
You saw these as well in the Irish potato famines. Those are the biggest risks associated with monocultures, because it's not just the fact that you deplete the soil around you, whatever it is you're planting, of the nutrients needed to support these crops, but it's also that if, you know, you can, no matter what you say about how advanced this species of rice, for example, how advanced this species is, how resistant to diseases
also mutate.
And if it mutates to a form that can affect this otherwise very resilient crop, it will affect all of them. And then you will find yourself in a very dire shortage. And so that's availability. And the other thing is that is affordability, because cost of food for consumers has also increased. Now, Deputy Agriculture and Agro-Based Industry Minister Sim Tsi Zin addressed this issue at an event over the weekend, saying that high food costs are partly due to abuse of power and the existence of cartels in the food and agriculture industry. And Selayang MP William Leong also cited a report by the Malaysia Competition Commission showing the impact of the abuse of approved permits in increasing monopolization of the market.
Yeah, so APs clearly is not just about cars, right? It seems to be impacting everything, whether it is food or steel, material, sugar. So basically, Leong, who is the Selayang MP, said that beef, as an example of this AP, he said that there are only two companies, they control 50% of total imports, and they ultimately decide prices. He said wholesale prices had gone up by 80%, while retail prices of meat had increased by 70% in the span of 7 years from 2010 to 2017. Now, this way beats any official or unofficial inflation number, right? So as a result, the prices of meat in Malaysia are higher than that of Singapore, Australia, Indonesia and other countries. Leong also touched on the price of mackerel or ikan kembung, which has shot up by more than 100% in the span of a decade. He said the market is controlled by a handful of companies despite having 75 AP holders for mackerel.
Yeah, so this is basically, APs have their roots in a very protectionist system, right? You have you introduce an approval process for import permits because you don't want to jeopardize the livelihoods of local producers. The problem with this is, you know, on the one hand, you have this AP system. And on the other hand, if you look at rice farmers, for example, a lot of them still languish in the B40 category. They're still very poor. And you wonder, you know, in all of this time that we've had these protectionist policies in place for rice, for sugar, for all of these things, why is it our local farmers are still struggling so hard?
Yeah, so the two people that clearly don't benefit, one are the consumers, because as a result, you can see beef prices or even fish prices have gone up almost 100% in 10 years. And then on the other hand, the poor fishermen and the poor agriculture farmers, they are struggling. They are the ones who are actually bearing the rising cost of, let's say, feedstock to grow these cows, or whether it is chickens. So it's basically who benefits. It seems like it's a middleman thing, isn't it?
The ones
who have the APs.
And you know, these, when you talk about these local farmers and the struggles that they face, it's not just the rising costs that they will have to pay these middlemen sometimes to, or it's also climate change, because you know, as we've seen, we've stopped talking about climate change as just an issue that's happening. It's now the conversational tone has now shifted to the fact that it's a climate emergency. It's happening, and how are we going to mitigate this? And this is something that I also addressed in my breakfast grill with Professor Syed Azam Ali, because he talks about the fact that, you know, in a very short time, within our lifetimes, we're going to see global temperatures rise by 3 degrees, and how is that going to affect our growing culture, and how is that going to affect the current crops that are being cultivated? So Crops for the Future does a lot of interesting work with several local strands of plants, so the moringa and the bambara groundnut, and it's looking at how they can develop the supply chains around these underutilized crops so that we have an alternative, you know, if for some reason our rice crop gets threatened or something like that.
But the other sad part to this story is that not only don't we have food security, that our food is expensive, we seem to have a nutritional crisis on our hands too, right? Because there's a prevalence of stunting in children under 5 years. We have 20.7% facing this problem in Malaysia. I don't understand it.
It's one in five children.
Yeah, it's a shocking statistic, right? Considering that our GDP per capita isn't that had low. And food seems to be abundant everywhere when you look. But yet, why aren't children growing normally? Is it the quality of food, the type of food that they get?
So this was from a UNICEF report on child malnutrition. And actually, it was an interesting report because they found that the highest instances of stunting were actually in a very urban area. So it was Kuala Lumpur of all of the states, and Putrajaya had the highest instances of stunting across all of the states in Malaysia. And they honestly didn't know the reason for this. But one of the factors that could have influenced this is also availability. Because even though we have very dense areas of population, availability of things like fruits and vegetables is sometimes not there. In some other countries, you can walk down the street to a convenience store and the convenience store will have fruits, you know, cheap
fruits.
Here
it's just snack food,
but
right?
But here it's a lot of it is just snack food because you're carb loading, you know, when you're poor.
Which is also why, ironically, we also have high obesity rates in Malaysia, right? They've increased from 5.4% to 11.9% among Malaysians younger than 18. So you have this polar opposite where kids are stunting and then you have kids who just eat so badly that they're overweight.
Yeah, and it's two sides of the same coin, and it's a very dire problem because stunting, for example, cannot be reversed, and it is going to be a long-term problem. But right now, we are heading into the 7:30 news, but first, a couple of messages for you. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.